Outer Rim News with Austin Gordy, Ray Snitaker, and Ashley Wilbanks.
I got a bad feeling about this.
And welcome to a brand new episode of the Outer Rim News Show. Tonight we are talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi Episode 5, and boy, was it a good episode. Lots of stuff to talk about, lots of stuff that happened in that episode. It's Episode 5, one more episode to go, so they're sort of wrapping everything up, and lots of questions were answered in this episode. But before we get into it too much, let's bring in the co-hostess with the mo-hostess, or something like that. Austin Gordy, and I look at him, he's looking pretty cool, and Ray Snitaker, who's looking over his script.
No. Okay, I figured out who killed Kennedy. You're gonna like this.
Oh wow.
It was a childhood George Lucas.
Childhood George Lucas.
Oh, yeah. Probably came with his car.
He was the Russian asset. Oh, I promise. He was the Russian asset. He was a sleeper agent. He never knew it. Hmm. And they said the secret word to him.
What? Django?
Oh, Fett? That would have been a really good one.
Mandalorian?
It was. I don't know. It was blue milk, probably. And then he went milk.
Blue milk.
Okay, gotta go.
Man, they actually had because they've been bringing up Obi-Wan Kenobi on Howard Stern a lot lately. Mm-hmm. And it was funny. They actually brought somebody. I mean, they always do bits, like just kind of off the cuff bits. And they like, oh, I have somebody at the door here. And it's like George Lucas. I don't know who the guy was doing his voice, but it was so good. It was great. It was so good. So like, I hope they do more of that. I'll let you know if they continue that trend. They seem to kind of build it up, but, I don't know. I thought that was a start of something great. Kind of reminds me of the good old day of Mad TV when Frank Caliendo. Was it Will?
The good old days of Frank Caliendo.
Was it Will? No, Will I'm trying Sasso. To think. Was it Will Sasso that did that character? Okay, I was going to say he did that, like Kenny Rogers and all that. Yeah. All those characters were hilarious. Yeah. And now I don't know that this one in particular though. He was just like you know he had that. The voice down, like, he just sounded like George Lucas calling in.
I wish I could do Lucas' voice. That would be so funny.
Oh, man. Fries should order fries.
I just want to hear the stories that because you don't hear enough of like personalized stories of him. It's always just kind of like George Lucas, the myth or the Star Wars guy. But I just like the Seth Rogen story. Did you hear about that recently in his book? Mm-hmm. It was like, I think he was hanging out with, I think it was Lucas and Spielberg or something like that. I don't know what it was for, probably movie meetings or something. But
sure, that's what it was.
Yeah. Probably. But no, it was so funny. He said that I think Seth said something about George brought up he was building a ship or something like that. Like he actually had a doomsday ship or something that he was gonna fly to space in or something like that. I don't know. Like it was just one of those like billionaire bonkers kind of things that
wow.
Yeah. It was hilarious, but at the same time I'm like, gosh, like he really thinks that way. Unless it was, I mean, the thing is it's so like I wouldn't normally I would say, ah, it's probably hearsay, but it like hearing it the way Seth Rogen talks about it and stuff, it's like, nah, I mean I don't see why he would lie about it. I mean he just seems like a fellow nerd like me who was kind of shocked, like, can you believe that creator of Star Wars actually did create a starship? He's like, he's getting out of here. Like,
he's like,
doesn't he have like $4 billion? Yeah, he's going to get out of here.
See, what happened was, yeah, they were just stoned, and George is like, hey, Seth, hey, you want to see my spaceship?
Yeah, my spaceship.
You want to see it?
If you wanted a spaceship.
And it's actually just his basement that he makes look like the best spaceship ever. Yeah. Seth was just as stoned, so he was completely buying every word of it.
He couldn't tell. He couldn't tell the difference. Okay, enough with the Seth Rogen talk. Okay, let's break down Kenobi Episode 5. So, first thoughts about Kenobi Episode 5. I don't want to start off with the nitpicking, but because I've always got something to say negative about it. But I like the show. I love the show. It's a great show. Don't get me wrong, but there are some little things I wish would they would do differently. But what do you think about it, Ray?
Just the episode was episode five, aka the episode where we really find out how the Grand Inquisitor hierarchy works. If you can snatch the patch off that person's armor, you're the new Grand Inquisitor. I like that.
I'm telling you, Vader's thing, his circle and all that, they hit like the Emperor Tully and Whale. It's like they're all just manipulative and just
manipulative and petty. I love the pettiness of it. The
absolute stabbing each other left and right, just cutting each other left and
it's
right.
It's almost like Sidious instilled like the idea of the rule of two, but a light version of it, just so they'll all go after each other so they won't think to focus on him.
I don't know. I don't know.
I agree though. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm glad we found out the true motive behind Reva. But yeah, there was some pettiness between the Inquisitors there. So I guess let's just start it off talking about, you know, from the beginning towards the end. And the way this thing started off was just mind blowing. It was just amazing. It was a real nostalgic kind of feel to it because it started off seeing Coruscant and then boom, the back of Anakin's head as a Padawan. And I'm assuming, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, this little scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan took place prior to the events of Attack of the Clones, do you think?
I'd have to say it has to because he had both hands.
Yeah, okay.
Wait,
yeah,
what are y'all talking about? The training sequences?
Yeah, the training sequences.
Oh, yeah, this was way before Attack of the Clones. Yeah,
because he had both hands.
I was thinking took place like just a few minutes prior to them going up the elevator.
Oh
no, I would say if anything, I mean, if they say it is, I would think that was stupid. So they, really? I think if anything, it looks like give it at least a solid year before the attack of the clones, at least.
My idea is stupid, Dawson. Thanks. Jeez.
Why in the world would they be in a training session and then get on an elevator that conveniently for the episode two? Well, I'm just saying story-wise, it would just be too corny.
He wasn't really a training session, though, right? I mean, it was like
It looked like it was sparring it looked like they were sparring, though. But
It also seemed like it was a
learning moment that Obi-Wan was trying to teach to Anakin.
It was a deeper lesson from Obi-Wan. Yeah,
that kind of occurred throughout the episode.
Yeah, that's true. Because the story, they do tell the story through these flashbacks. Because
they speak to the parallels of the personalities that still exist at their care, 10 years later with both of these characters.
Yeah.
Did it start with the flashback or did it start with Vader on the ship?
It started with
the flashback and then it went to Vader on the ship.
Yeah, I think.
It starts with the flashback. Yeah. I was going to say it starts with the flashback. Then when you said Vader, I was like, wait, did it start with Vader's mask?
Because they did a reveal to Vader thinking it almost seems like he's remembering it maybe.
Yeah, he is.
But, the other interesting thing about this episode before we get too deep into it was it was almost like what you would call a bottle episode. Almost all the action, all the story, most of the story took place in that area, in that little base. Trying to escape, all the stuff that happened, all of it was in kind of contained to that zone with the exception of the very beginning and the very end. So I thought that was interesting compared with the rest of the show, which was, I guess the Fortress was pretty contained, but not as contained, I would say, as this, because it was literally like, I think, two areas and a hallway and a corridor in the outside area where they were coming into them.
But I would agree with you. It seemed like a bottle episode for sure. Because you were contained. I think it was on purpose for that episode. It felt that way. Like it kind of felt like the walls were starting to close in on Obi. So you're supposed to feel like there's not much hope left. Mm-hmm. I see what you're talking about.
I didn't realize. I see it now that you say that. I didn't notice it while I was watching the show. How many times have y'all seen it? This episode.
I've only watched it once so far.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've watched it twice. I watched it last night and this morning just to try to catch up because there's one scene I had to go back and make sure was correct that we'll get into it later. Sure. But Okay, so this first scene between Anakin and Obi-Wan is where one of my gripes is, and it's a continuation from last week's episode, where the CGI or lack of CGI really showed itself off. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but Anakin did not look like a young Padawan learner in the face.
It was shaky at times, but I thought they pulled it off all right. It's like if we can suspend belief for the Luke crap and all, and all the other stuff, like I was with you. I was looking at it trying to,
you know, my see brain some was immediately creases in Hayden's head.
I was immediately trying to, my brain was trying to poke holes in it, but then I'm like, you know what? Like, and we'll get to that soon. Like, that's something you really don't want to do with this series in particular, is you don't want to go roaming for cracks too much. You know, but
I mean, it's fair game to me. I mean, you know, I mean, we're all Star Wars fans.
Yeah.
And I think that we all, you know, the consensus is that we love this show.
Oh, yeah. Just,
but I mean, if you're going to critique it, I mean, we might as well point out the negative.
I'll say, though, but compared to, but I will say, though, it was, for what it's worth, it's great. I mean, technology wise, we've made leaps and bounds.
Oh,
and they can even do that. Now, I will say with Anakin, it was a little more of a struggle because he's got to play younger. I did seem like they played a little lazy with, like, I'm surprised they didn't actually CG scale him down just a tad bit too. You know what I'm saying? Like, thin him out a little bit, because he just looked like his normal, like he was just cosplaying as his younger self. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they just tweaked the face a little bit. That was the only thing I could see where they were like, all right, they, it would have been, it, you know, but at the same time, it's probably just budgetary. Like, man, we can only,
COVID, you know, related to, you know, they had a lot of, you know, imagine there were some visual effects, you know, struggles with how COVID affected, you know.
I was thinking more along the lines of budget too, because, you know, you got to pay Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at least
that executive producer credit.
Yeah.
Well, at least Ewan, you know, it didn't seem like they had to do much in terms of deep faking on his face, because
he looks the same.
Yeah. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to, I guess, you know, when it comes to 10 years difference.
When you're already in your 30s, then.
When your character is someone within that 20 to 40s area in terms of age, it's very easy to kind of, you know, I'd say it's pretty easy to kind of get away with how they did it with him. Anakin, when you're having to have someone who's reaching their 40s, make sure that they still look like they're someone in their
20s.
No, not even playing a character who is in their teens still. Because I think Anakin is like 19, I think.
Yeah, he's probably about right.
Or less or so.
Was he in Phantom Menace? Was he 10?
He was 9.
9.
9, yeah.
So he's 19, because I think it's 10 years between the Phantom Menace and Attack.
So this was,
Sure now that we've rebooted canons and stuff like that, people can argue and they'll probably say differently or something. As far as I'm concerned, or as far as I know, it's always been that Anakin was 9 and Phantom Menace, and then you go from there.
Yeah.
So it's like it's like 10 years after that. So he's 19 in episode 2, and then 3 years.
Okay.
So he's 22.
I imagine it's a little bit harder to make someone who's getting at that age to look like you're in your late teens compared when you're in your 20s, when it's a lot easier to pull that off.
And plus, you know, it was just like the flashback sequences.
Yeah,
I thought they did a great job. It also just made me feel good because I'm getting more like prequel nostalgia, episode 2 era nostalgia. I'm like, now I just almost want them to just make a little miniseries movie. Just all this CG Obi and Anakin, or do what, you know, whatever characters, if it didn't even have to be that subject matter, just something prequel era and just continue the adventures. Like, I don't know. It's just so great watching them.
Well, I'm gonna say this, and we'll stop talking about the way Anakin looked in these flashbacks. But even though, you know, they didn't use CGI, but maybe just a little makeup or something, you know, just a little practical effects, just to try to get the wrinkles from here and up here. Because, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people are saying it didn't take him out, but it sort of took me out because I was looking at his face the whole time, you know.
And you were just like, I'm going to turn this show off. I don't like
it. No, I'm going to say, I didn't say that. I enjoyed it, but I was like, man, this is kind of hard to get over, you know.
It makes me want to write a letter.
Yeah, I'm going to write a letter to Lucasfilm. I pay good money for Disney Plus.
I can't have this lack of technology. You guys are shortchanging me. I paid you guys like
$7.99. $7.99 on a monthly basis.
I actually think I do get the ESPN, Hulu, Disney.
Yeah, I pay like $12.99.
I think for all three.
Yeah,
I do too.
I was like, if you want to get,
I had to like get onto them. I had to make sure they made my Hulu ad free. I'm like, don't give me that, because you know how they try to like.
If you want to get your TV show budget's worth, you need to be getting HBO Max, where you're paying $15 a month and you're getting your money's worth.
Yeah.
it was noticeable. It didn't bother me much, but what I liked the most was the symbolism behind the scene and how it was used throughout the episode. That was really one of my favorite parts. And also seeing how they were before everything went down. And you know, all the conflicts that came, you really saw like an early precursor of how and why they were so matched up in Revenge of the Sith, you know, in terms of their abilities, because of how well they knew each other in terms of fighting. You know, they were pretty, you know, there were some great moments that looked, you know, like actual moves straight from episode
three. Fight. I was gonna point that out. I was gonna say, number one, you got the trademark Anakin flair. Remember his little flip he does? That was a great moment. And then that when they were practicing, when he was like trying to teach Anakin about like disarming, you know, like having the back to back fighting, they did that in episode three. So it's almost like you saw him teach him the move that they use on each other in that fight, where they, you know, where it's like they don't really gain ground on either one. They're just equally matched. That's what I'm saying. It's like you pointed that out. I think they straight up, that was a reference to the final fight. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw that stuff, I would get chills. I'd be like, oh, that's so cool. Like, it's totally like them kind of just preparing for that moment.
Yeah.
Now, did he use the one-handed, like, slash during that scene?
I think that was more like him connecting to the Vader-ness. That's what I'm saying.
I thought he came down on Kenobi with one hand.
I think it was when he was talking about what is it?
In that first fight,
it was the line about mercy and victory or something like that.
Yes.
I think. You know, you can't have victory if you're always thinking about mercy or something like that.
Yeah. But I thought that was really cool though, how they introduced that, because you know, obviously Anakin's usually like a really fast fighter when he was that age. But when they saw like he was just barreling, when he was started barreling at Obi, just trying to get him to tell him to stop the fight. It was like he almost became Vader with his fighting style. He became Vader. I thought that was a cool throw too.
And I mean, and we'll get into it later because of how it kind of comes back throughout the episode. But I did like, They were on two opposite ends of a spectrum of how they were, where their characters were in that moment during this lesson, because you can see with how Anakin, even Hayden's acting during it, but you know, with what they would say to each other, you would see that Obi-Wan's on a completely different mindset right now, you know, of I'm trying to teach something here, and Anakin is on a completely different wavelength thinking, I've got to win.
Yep.
And that plays into like the theme of, you know, a big thing that happens in the episode, which when we get back to present day, you know, we find out that, you know, well, we already knew that they were, Lola was bugged and she's sabotaging the, the bay doors.
Yeah.
It's like whatever the controls were she was at, but it obviously, I guess, ran the station.
Yeah.
and the bay doors.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give this like one thing I was worried about, because when they approached Vader at the beginning of the episode and they told him, you know, yeah, we're tracking them, we're on our way there now and stuff like that. And then we see them land and Roken comes out. I was starting to think to myself, like, man, these people, like, they know this is a bad idea. And fortunately, when he came, you know, he came and talked to Obi-Wan, he said, like, we're already, you know, we're packing, we already know this is a bad idea. You know, the whole idea that as soon as, you know, doing something like that already puts that place at risk. So we need to evacuate anyways. So I like that, you know, there was forethought. You know, they were smart enough to know that they needed to go ahead and get out of there, even though they didn't know that they were being tracked yet.
And this is something that I didn't recognize until, like, the second time I watched it. What's the planet they land on?
Jabim?
Jabim, yeah. Those people that they were rescuing, did you realize that was just, I guess the kids were all force sensitive?
Were they?
Yeah, because they were going to Jabim, because mm-hmm. that's like the underground railroad for the force sensitive people. And they had been he was saying, you know, they've been here for months waiting.
Oh, you know, that never crossed my mind.
Until the second time I watched it, I was looking at Obi-Wan and he was just, here's lightsabers all through here, you know, from the Jedi who've
been through there before.
Yep. And the Jedi robe.
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw that, I was wondering what that was about. But yeah, thinking about it, that was probably maybe a symbolic thing by those Jedi, is that they're having to shed who they were before.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably the last step, as you know, giving up these things that you know, that really identify what you were.
And it's going to be interesting to see, like, in not just, I mean, in this show, they're not going to show it, but like in other Star Wars stories, like who all's been through this area. Mm-hmm. Like, are we going to get a flashback to Cal Kestis going, you know, through the Underground Railroad, or what is it called? I keep calling it Underground Railroad.
The path.
Jeez. Yeah. You know, or do we? I'm sure the comics will have some examples of it.
Yeah.
You know,
well, yeah, the two, yeah, I mean, the two big name people that we know took it were part of it were Kanan and
Quinlan Vos.
Quinlan, yeah. Quinlan.
How do we know Kanan did it?
He was one of the names listed. Caleb Doom.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay,
His old name. So that explains how he was able to, you know, get his life started under that new name. They probably helped him get new information.
That's right.
But you know, this also kind of had a bit of a Helm's Deep feel to it.
Yeah, that's what it did.
For sure. And especially, I mean, especially when the fight starts, I'm like, we're going at it. Like, we're.
Yeah. Well, before we even get to the fight, you know, there was the part where the negotiation happened.
The negotiator. You
know, where Reva speaks with Obi-Wan. Was mm-hmm. there like force being used for that conversation? Because he did like a little touch, almost like a force touch thing to the door, like almost maybe like he was using it to get his voice to her easier through the wall.
That's what I was thinking. I thought he was trying to present like some sort of a warm, like positive feeling, you know, like a peaceful feeling. Like I'm not trying to attack you right now.
Cause there wasn't intentional touching that he did to the door when he reached it.
And maybe it also helped him communicate too. Like here,
that's what I assumed, that it was something communicating wise. Otherwise it'd be, cause they were talking very low. And I was thinking with how thick those doors had to have been, it would be like, Reva, I have to ask you about Anakin.
It's kind of like that scene. It's like the scene, because you said Helm's Deep, remember in The Hobbit? It's like, I think it was the third movie. Remember they're having the scene like through the wall in the mountain? And he's like, are we going to have peace or was it something like peace or war? And he's like, whoa. And it's just, all of it's through this tunnel. Like, yeah, it's totally the same kind of scene.
But, well, in that conversation, we got the big reveal, which we kind of guessed at it, didn't we? Kind of theorized, you know, we kind of...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're kind of on the money about this, not just about who she was, but also her true motive.
Yeah, I think maybe episode one or two.
Yeah.
It was the first two episodes, so the first review we did, I think we called it.
Yeah, because...
I just love Ewan's reaction to her. You're hunting him. Yeah. like, how
dare
you? Don't you know what you're doing?
See, what you don't realize is that Ewan was actually, you know, he is accidentally channeling his BBC production voice.
Right. It was like something that 3PO would have said. It was just the way he was just like, you're haunting him. but it was just kind of dramatic. I like it though. It's camp. It's that camp. They've throughout this whole series in particular, it's felt kind of campy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first big reveal was, I mean, one that we you know, which was pretty obvious, was she was one of the younglings at the very, very beginning of the series when we saw the flashback of Order 66.
Yep.
And they also brought that flashback, well, continued it to show what happened, which was when they ran down that hallway, Anakin and the clone troopers came up and just slaughtered them all. And she watched, you know, she saw, so she knew, you know, straight up Anakin Skywalker, you know, was behind this.
But
and
she still had to put some, there's, you know, she knows him as Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those clone troopers had to say something like Lord Vader or something.
Yeah.
To really put two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
And look, because she wasn't in Mustafar.
Vader had to have been mentioned at some point, probably. Yeah. Maybe they reported to him as Vader when during that, and she overheard it. But the only thing about that flashback I was kind of wondering about, and it might have been one of those writer things where we don't really know how we can pull this off, so we're just going to kind of hand wave it and just assume you're okay with it, which was when he was slaughtering all of them, how did she not get killed, not get slaughtered, and also was able to play dead?
No, okay, so if you go back and you go to the end of the episode, when Vader confronts Reva, and she's on her knees seeing him come forward to him, and then she looks and for a split second she sees Anakin. What that told me was, yes, he thrust his lightsaber through her stomach.
When she was a kid.
Oh, like he did then. So she saw it coming yet again. She's like, oh, this is happening again.
What if she's had a robot stomach and he didn't even do anything to her? Because he already stabbed her the one time.
Yeah.
And she had to get that replaced. And so he messed up and stabbed her through the stomach again.
As the Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett has told us, a gut shot is only a flesh wound in this
Star Wars.
You can just put some stereo DVD parts in your stomach and you're good to go.
Yeah. I just love how when people in the Star Wars universe, people are frequently losing consciousness and waking up with robot parts and they're totally cool with it. And I don't get that in this world. I would be a little more peeved. I'd be like, somebody couldn't ask me. You wake up and you pull up your shirt and you're nothing but a robot, like, and oh, you're cool new. With it. Oh, huh? Let's shake that one off.
It's like just looking at it for a long off. Moment, just looking at your robot parts.
I guess I won't be eating anything anymore.
Right.
No. Sugar snaps.
Oh, God.
Oh, gosh. So what were you even talking about? How she survived.
Besides that, so we found out that she was one of the younglings that survived, and that was her true purpose and why she was after Obi-Wan was she was playing a long game, a very long game apparently, because you had to go through all the Inquisitor training, all the Inquisitors training, and I think that is preceded with torture, because I think most of the time they torture the Force, the Force sensitives or the ex-Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she went through all that just so she could get close enough to try to do a killing strike on him.
That's some real hateful stuff there.
What'd you think of the fight?
What did y'all think of the fight scene between her and Vader? I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it felt very Hong Kong cinema.
Yeah.
That's why I liked it. It really was a harken
when he was,
But to me, it harkened back to the prequels again. Yeah. To me, it was like that, it was like, how do we now show, like, Vader's obviously a different fighter now. Like, Anakin's not the same anymore, so we got to give him a different fighting style, but still make it flashy, so that the movements make sense, but with less movement for him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like you say, yeah, it's kind of chop suey or whatever. I love it. I thought it was a great. And it was about time we finally got us a memorable fight scene again in the Star Wars series. Like, I'm just saying something you could think back on and be like, remember that fight sequence between that. You know,
I think you're getting that's gonna be pretty cool. Yeah. I think you're getting a memorable one next episode.
Oh, for sure. That's what I can't wait for. I feel like that was sort of a precursor to that.
Yeah.
Well, it felt like a breath of fresh air to get a, just a, you know, even if it's, it's almost like a harken back to Nick Gillard choreography again, and I missed it.
Yeah. Well, sort of. We'll dig deeper into it. In a minute.
Get to the end. Yeah.
Because we had some cool stuff that happened before we even got to that fight, because, you know, after they had their talk and he tried to convince her to help him, How did they get? Wait, I'm okay, Ashley, because you watched it more fresh.
Twice. Yes, I've watched it twice.
So there was like almost two parts to this whole negotiation because first, so
they were
I think
talking,
the,
yeah.
It, now, and did she try to cut the door open yet at that point?
Yeah, well, after he says, you're hunting him.
And then she cuts the door open.
And then they talk a little bit, and then she stabs the door with
because the... Because that went into one of my, like, in terms of cool little Obi-Wan moments, there that was just a really cool little, just action movie moment that I really like that you make use of with a character that has these kind of powers, which was... The moment the door is open and he realized danger was coming, she was coming at him, he just force-barreled her back. And I just love that, just like improv moment. I love improv action moments like that. They always come off so kind of cool to me. So I thought that was like just a tiny little, like, it's nothing big or flashy, but it's one of those cool little, like I said, like, you know, just, you know, low-key improv moments that really, it's probably one of my probably my top three or so Obi-Wan moments throughout all of Star Wars now.
Yeah, and I think that moment showed that he's back.
Yeah,
sure.
He's
and how quick he reacted to it. Yeah.
He's full force again.
Because that, so there was that moment, and that forced them back, didn't it? I believe.
Because no, that's when that's when this fight the fight started.
Yeah, and they had to force that, so they had to evacuate that one area, move back to where the ships were, and that's where we lost two of our characters. I think in that retreat,
Tala
and Durith, and Ned B.
Yep,
which was yeah.
You still can't tell me he's just a robot. I mean, I think there's more to their story that gets told somewhere else, and there's going to be a reveal about that guy.
Or it's like her lover's heart is in that robot. It's like his physical heart. It's like RoboCop 2.
There's got to be something because that is not just a robot.
I mean, RoboCop 2. What do you have in there? His heart? No, his spleen.
Yeah, it's still functioning. It's a part of him. So he'll always live on in this machine.
And he's just like over there. He's over there, like hand gesturing to her, and he's kind of just saying, "I have to pee, I have to pee."
It's just light bulbs. It's just like two different colored light bulbs. It's like anyway.
Gosh. But then she made the ultimate sacrifice with the thermal detonator.
Yeah. Well, she took a gut shot, and that it was a sad little moment because she looked at it and really realized, sad. Like, there's no escape from this.
I was going to say, what was really sad is that it came off, like, right after my wife was just saying, like, how much she loved the character. She's like, I love her. I want to get a toy of her. It was like, I want to get a Black Series figure of her. No!
Well, she still can.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then I showed her, I was like, if it makes you feel any better, you kind of, yeah. And I just, like, showed her on the phone. I was like, Black Series figure.
Yeah.
She'll always live on. That's good.
Quick aside, yeah, I was a little disappointed with that Black Series figure though, because I would have liked her in her kind of rebel look.
I agree.
Like that more. But moving on from that, so they got pushed back, and then we got another flashback. We might have had one before, but this one kind of hit home, I think, part of the theme of the episode was how Obi-Wan was going to be able to escape Vader, which was using his own blind rage against him, which is, you know, they showed it in the flashback. He used Anakin's, you know, aggressive nature, his need to win. He used it against him to take his lightsaber from him after he'd already been disarmed.
Yeah. So to me, the flashbacks were like chess. Mm-hmm. Like every move, you know, there's a flashback to show you, to explain what happened.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that was one of them, like Vader saying checkmate, but then really, that's what he's thinking, but really Obi-Wan's like, nah, ain't no checkmate here, homie.
What I was talking about earlier with how in that flashback, the characters seemed on different wavelengths. One moment that really stood out to me was at the end of that, when Obi-Wan was kind of trying to tell him that, you know, this was a lesson, you know, after he'd beaten him. And he kind of explained the lesson to him. It almost seemed like Anakin really didn't get what he telling him, because what I was getting from their, you know, not just the dialogue, but with how they were both talking, Obi-Wan was also blind a little himself, because he was, you know, he was going in that way that kind of ended up being the big failure of him, is that he tried to teach Anakin without understanding, or trying to understand that this isn't a normal Padawan. You have a Padawan that was a 10-year-old kid, nine-year-old kid before. Mm-hmm. So he's got a lot of emotions that he needs to work out. And he just kind of ignored it and just hoped for the best as he, you know, taught him. And just, you know,
yeah.
And so you have Obi-Wan saying this lesson to him, like, you know, your aggressiveness, you know, it's not, you know, your need to win, it's not going to, you know, you need to be able to, but you know, he's saying his lesson. But then at the end of it, when you see that last shot of Hayden, it kind of had this kind of frustration to it. And that kind of, for me, that kind of spoke to the Anakin, is like, he's not getting it. Whereas Obi-Wan is trying to teach him a lesson, and also kind of having his own failings and how he's trying to teach him, Anakin is having his own failings as well, because he's not trying to understand that it's a lesson being taught to him. You know, it's almost like he was treating it like a personal slight. Like, I've got to get better now. I'm not going to learn what he's saying. I'm not thinking about learning about, you know, from this. I'm thinking about, well, I got to figure out how to beat him next time then. Which I mean, at least that's how I interpreted it. And I thought that was a really interesting, you know, take on it.
And that's exactly how Anakin was. I mean, even in the end, I mean, it was just Anakin just didn't, just blinded to it.
Yeah.
Just like you said, the blind rage, just he didn't see where he went wrong. It's about, well, what, you know, I failed. So I will succeed next
stronger.
Time.
I will get stronger. And like, and you know, that I love that theme that's kind of been built. It's been built for a long time, since the prequels almost at this point, because I remember Matthew Stover wrote the novelization, one of the best novelizations of any Star Wars book, if you haven't read it.
Attack of the Clones?
No.
Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith.
Absolute fantastic novelization.
Yeah, that and his Shatterpoint, for sure. Yeah. Two of some of the best Star Wars books ever written.
But, you know, there's a moment where he talks about, I think it's probably in the moments right before their duel starts, or maybe during the duel, but the line is like, you know, it was just two men and the lot, and you know, basically saying like it was the two of them alone, and their lives, you know, basically saying that they've destroyed each other's lives with everything that had happened to them, you know, and Anakin's failures and then Obi-Wan's failures and how they were intertwined with each other. So.
That's true. I mean, it's like Anakin's failures was Obi-Wan's failures, and that's kind of the whole point of the show.
Yeah. Obi-Wan would have probably fared better with an Ahsoka-like Padawan than he would have with an Anakin-like Padawan. An Anakin Padawan needed a Qui-Gon, which he didn't get.
And there was only one Qui-Gon.
Yeah,
right.
Because Qui-Gon thought kind of different. He was leaning. He was moving another way.
Yeah, which is a great tragedy that
towards enlightenment. I think Qui-Gon was on the verge of enlightenment. I think
Qui-Gon was. The green lightsabers almost speak to that, but Qui-Gon was almost what Luke ended up becoming in Return of the Jedi, or was supposed to become at the end of Return of the Jedi, a Jedi who could still love, and you know, you can have attachment, you just can't let it drive you to these dark places, you know, to these fearful places, you know, of loss and stuff like that. But back to the actual episode.
Yeah.
So we get them trapped, and I think Leia's still looking for, she's trying to fix the door. She's the only one small enough to go up into the ventilation area.
In the network closet.
Yeah,
for some reason, horrible
network closet.
Never sees Lola up there. Like while she's
trying to figure stuff out. Like,
how could she with all those cables?
Yeah,
but come on, like that. You would hear the servo motors. You would see the red light. I mean, she'd be like, "What's in here?"
You know, throughout the whole series, I've noticed something about Lola, and my wife keeps pointing it out, and I keep forgetting to bring it up here. Tell me, does she remind you of Weibo from Flubber?
Yeah.
And not just, and more so than Weibo, her daughter, Weebet, at the very end, because I think she has a similar color scheme.
Yeah.
You've seen Flubber, haven't you, Ashley, with Robin Williams?
Yeah, I think I have, but it's been like, I've watched it once, and it was like a long time ago.
Yeah, he had his robot assistant, Weibo, was like a flying disc-shaped robot. It's very, pretty similar to how Lola is in design. And then, I said Weebet, her daughter was like a, I think she had a red color to her.
That's interesting that, you know, especially when she grabs Lola.
And it's a restraining bolt. The easiest problem ever, apparently, for droids.
You're blue now.
Yeah, when we first saw it, I was like, I'm guessing all restraining bolts are just little magnetic things that are just, you just pop them off.
Yeah, I just want to know what, I want to see like either, I don't know what media you could see it in, if it's a like a TV show, like an episode of something or a short story, but I want to see a droid's brain when you slap a bolt on them, like a restraining bolt on them. Like, what is it in their head where they're just like, I can't move from this spot anymore. I should never walk past that boundary. That is so dangerous. I'll never do that. You know, things like that. I just want to know what's in their head that like, how does that one, like you said, that little magnetic bolt just completely just, I don't know. It just completely rewires all I know is that,
I don't know, is when I put a magnet on my computer, it just dies. Mine doesn't try to go evil and try to sabotage me.
That's Star Wars technology. Just
I love it.
Go with it.
Think about 3PO got his head put on a battle droid, and he had a few moments where he was like, "Die, Jedi, still die."
What am I saying? Oh, no. You're hunting him.
So while Leia's doing that, Obi-Wan did the big little sacrifice decoy move, which was he pretended to surrender, which would buy them the time, you know, which was supposed to buy them time so they could start getting their evacuation.
Which brings me to another nitpick. Why hand off your lightsaber, your gun, and your Jedi communicator to the dude who's like the worst guy in the whole camp there? And not just, you know, handing it to the worst guy, but just giving them up to begin with.
Well, I think first off, I would say easiest explanation for that was when he first surrendered, they would have taken it off of him anyways.
Yeah.
Because he had to be escorted all the way there.
I guess
taking everything off of him. And he definitely did not need, under any circumstances, he did not need them to find the communicator because of what was in it. That was more sensitive than the lightsaber or the blaster.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, he probably should have taken an extra minute or two and found Roken and gave it to him because Taja didn't.
I'm surprised he didn't go ahead and break that communicator, though, to be honest. Like, that was a risky move to leave that communicator there because, it, you know, I mean, we see what happens. And I'm like, oh, man, that's bigger. Well,
that's his only way to connect to Bail, right?
I know, but I'm just saying, like, if you have to separate yourself from something like that with all the Imperials around and stuff going down, I would have smashed that thing.
Oh, yeah. Could have been a situation where when he got back in touch with Bail, I was like, Bail, I'm going to need another one now because I had to stomp that last one.
Yeah. Well, it's stomped now. So,
but so he did the fake sacrifice play.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, God.
And actually sort of played Reva, too.
Reva. Yeah.
You know, because he sort of is like, I think he comes up to her and she's under the impression we're going to take him down together.
I don't think it was even, I think he might have been trying that with her.
But he like left.
Well, I think he realized that it wasn't going to play out like that. The closest they were going to be able to get was, you know, we both have a common enemy here, but more in essence, you know, they had two different goals. His goal was not to kill Vader. Mm-hmm. You know, his goal was to get Leia to safety and get out of there. And he knew, you know, basically it almost seemed like he was pointing a bull, you know, at a red flag.
And plus he knew that it was going to fail. He knew that she couldn't.
So basically, like, I think it was more, he was doing double speak to tell her, okay, I'm helping you get him right where you want him. That's it. You know, but, you know,
yeah. I'm giving you what you want. There you go. But I gotta finish my mission.
Yeah. I think maybe at first he might've been trying to get through and say, like, you know, we can do this together. You know, maybe you can, you know, maybe it was the old Obi-Wan who thinks maybe he can help her, you know. And then I think when she said to him, you know, what makes you, I think she said, like, what makes you think he doesn't already suspect this or something like that? And which turns out being true.
Yeah.
I think at that point he realized, okay, I'm not, you know, I'm not dealing with rationality and that, you know, she's a dangerous wild card.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think he realized, okay, so I'm going to play this out to the point that I need to get out of here. And then that's what he did.
But okay. So thinking back, we skipped over something really, really important. Yeah. One little line that Reva mentions or says to Obi-Wan during their negotiation. And she was like, I can't remember what brought this up, but she said something to the effect of, you don't want him dead or you don't want to kill him.
Did she say that?
Yeah.
Do you remember that, Austin?
I can't remember that. I just remember when she blamed him, like when she originally blamed him, like, where were you? Like when he killed everybody or when he did all that. She was like, where were you? And Obi really didn't defend himself. And I got kind of mad because I'm like, that wasn't his fault, girl. Like, he didn't have it. Number one, he wasn't even on the planet. It was a surprise attack, you little punk. And then, I mean, I was like, I was getting mad because I was like, Obi, like, defend yourself.
I think in that moment, it was probably more of the child she was is the person that's speaking to him right then, because you're not thinking in terms of rationality. You're thinking of, you know,
well, I just thought, even though apparently he didn't, you know, say, girl, I did try. I thought I killed him.
But then
that's what I'm surprised he didn't say something like, I thought I did, you know, and then it would be like, oh, you know.
But I feel like, but if she's thinking like that, nothing he said would have been enough.
No.
If he had said, I was off planet, then she probably would have came back and just said, well, then you should have been there.
Right.
You know? Or if he tried to say, I tried to kill him, it's like, well, look at me. It wasn't good enough. You
she's
know?
Pretty much. And like, yeah, she's pretty much like
she's consumed.
A consumed, lost case anyways. Yeah. I mean, it's like she's pretty much turned to the dark side, even though her intentions weren't necessarily like her power.
She's using the dark side to a very
wrong. Yeah.
Or not even wrong, but she's using the dark side to a very focused, hyper-focused purpose. You know, it's not manipulating this, you know, this dark power to achieve her goal, which is very, you know, Sith-like. Ash is analyzing something on the screen.
Yeah, I'm going back and I'm playing. I'm watching the episode. I'm trying to pick this out right here. I'm watching them talk.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want him dead.
Oh, yeah.
That's what
I guess that plays into the secret that she finds out, that, or she's going to find out.
Do you really want Anakin dead?
Oh.
That's what she says. And he never answers. He pauses. Mm-hmm. And you can see like the self-reflection in his eye. Like, is that really what is that really what I'm thinking? Is that really what I'm wanting? Mm-hmm. Because I think that, you know, even though he knows in his heart, Anakin's Vader, he's still Anakin.
Mm-hmm. I think this maybe helps him come more to that conclusion, is, you know, the conclusion that he tells Luke, which is, you know, the fallacy, which is, you know, Anakin died, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's maybe that's a coping mechanism for him.
But also, I think it could be that could be a signal to the theme to Vader in the end, is that he can be saved, that Anakin's still in there. And that could also be a nod to that.
Yeah.
Like that maybe I don't want him dead because there is good in him. Because remember, Padme even said, Obi-Wan, there's good in him. I you know.
Which is, yeah.
And so maybe that's sort of, now that he's like, wow, I didn't kill him.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe there is a chance. Yeah. And there's a lot of that. Like maybe, you know.
Which is weird too, because yeah, I like the idea that he's more about the possibility of saving Anakin through his children. Maybe that they're what he needs to be redeemed. But also, if I remember correctly, in episode 6, doesn't he kind of isn't he kind of like a pusher of the idea to Luke that you're going to, you know, you might, you're going to have to kill Vader to stop this.
You're going to have to murder.
You're going to have to face. Well, you're going to have to face him again. You're going to have to face him. I don't think you'll have, I mean, I don't think he ever was like, you have to kill him, but you're going to have to, you're going to have to face off with him. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like he's, it's either going to kill you or you're going to kill him or you're going to, I just felt like he was saying in a way, you're going to have to face your father. Like
maybe the actual dialogue is how they're out. They have that wiggle room for how Obi-Wan is, you know, the whole Luke thing. So, because, yeah, I remember I've seen some arguments where, you know, basically it seemed like Luke is in conflict with what the Last Jedi, you know, Obi-Wan and Yoda, the bygone era, what they want him to do, which is kill Vader and Sidious and Vader, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the actual answer was, you know, to save Anakin, you know. You know, not strike him down, but, you know, bring him back to the light, which is what he ended up doing.
I mean, if you go back to Revenge of the Sith, these and we were brothers, Anakin.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't just lose that because somebody does some bad stuff over here. You still have that family connection.
Yeah.
I think, and even though you know this guy's done a lot of bad stuff, it's hard to say I need to pull the trigger and kill him.
Yeah.
Plus, otherwise, he didn't kill him.
That's what I'm saying. He would have killed him then.
Yeah, he just let him. He let the fire. He was like, "I'm just going to let this planet kill him. I can't do it." But the fact that he's got that second chance, I think, is another thing that plays there. It's like, okay, this is a new, you know, part of the equation. He's alive. What do I do now?
Yeah,
there is a chance. This is what Padme said. This is what he's got. He's got children that are alive. Like he should. Maybe he has a chance to have a future with them, you know, things like that. I mean, there's probably a whole lot of stuff going on there. That's the beauty of the story writing there, though, you know, with George.
Which, you know, I like the idea that him not knowing, you know, that Anakin was Vader or Anakin was alive. Not that Anakin was Vader, but that he was alive. So that means that the whole time when they're planning hiding away the children, that was never under the assumption of hiding them from Anakin. That was always under the idea of hiding them away from Sidious so he could never find them, which is interesting too.
But I think because Anakin was
His apprentice, well, they knew that, obviously.
Well, not just that, but Anakin was the chosen one. His midichlorian level was off the scale. He was you know, just a super powerful Jedi.
Yeah,
they can only assume, okay, maybe these traits get passed on to the kids and they could be the springboard to bring back
a new generation.
The new Jedi.
Narrator, they failed.
But, you know, I mean, this is the cool part about stuff like Obi-Wan. Yeah. This show is, you know, it lets us revisit the previous movies, previous series, all that kind of stuff, and it puts more importance or different spins on things that we already know or thought that we knew.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about, you know.
Which I noticed some people cannot handle. They cannot handle it at all.
No, they can't. They can't.
Like, they still cling on to every syllable out of Leia's recording's mouth like it's a Bible.
Yeah.
Like, "Oh, General Kenobi, you served my father in the Clone Wars. That means I couldn't have known you ever because I should have been saying it in this message right now. Remember how you saved me when I was 10 years old? I need to make sure that this is all in this message just for you."
"Hey, remember how you saved me before? I need somebody with that kind of experience to come save me again." Looking at you.
Ben Obi-Wan.
"I need you to pull some of that magic again. Come get me."
All right. So let's get towards the end here. So
Obi-Wan.
No, but Vader has landed on the planet now. He's going through the tunnels and he comes out and does some Force Unleashed kind of stuff.
Well, I forgot. Wait, how does it go down with Obi-Wan? Does he just run before Vader even gets there?
Yeah, because remember Obi-Wan and then trying to get to the ship. And then by the time Vader and them come out, it's like after Reva and them came out first.
Yeah.
So it was like this chain effect. But Yeah, no, that was a. Cool. I will say though, I kind of laughed at the very end of that sequence though.
Well, the Force Unleashed moment that Austin, I mean, is that what we're talking about? The moment where he gets into the hangar bay, sees the ship about to take off, in one hand catches it with the Force.
Yeah,
I thought that was I thought that was great, because if any character was going to pull that move, it would be Vader.
Yeah,
but the funny part about, like, I love that move, but immediately it was like a fake out, and there was another ship that takes
off. That was a good fake
out. I'm like, where was that ship before? Because they had the cut,
dude. Well, that's why I watched it again.
There were two ships.
If you look,
I know, but it was just the way they cut. I thought, I mean, if you can clear it up for me, but I just felt like the way they cut it, it was like that ship totally was not in the shot, and then all of a sudden it's there, it's gone, like it's gone. I'm like, Vader should have totally known that there were two ships there, and why didn't he just go like, no, you're not coming. I don't know. It was just so funny how it was like you said,
catch us. Yeah,
so it's kind of like the fire scene. It's like Vader can't. He only can. It's like he can only. I'm trying to figure out the word. It's like he can only figure the trick out once. It's like he could put a fire out once, and then you flare that fire up again. He's like, I don't know. Maybe. You know, and I obviously that what I did before won't work again, right? Mm-hmm. Right, it's like
he just gets the first ship easy. He's just like he's inhaling his breather right after. It's like
it could be. Maybe it's like he's using so much like Force energy. Like, oh, I'm just here, and all of a sudden he's like, oh no, I just wasted all my energy. I can't get it. No. Oh man, I did though. It was just so funny when that thing took off.
The best moment would have been afterwards if there could have been some kind of viewport or something that Vader could see where someone's like flipping him off
or mooning him.
that would have been just like taking off, and you see this,
and then someone like
Kenobi's butt cheeks,
or somebody painted on the very bottom of the ship, like just so he could see it. Bye bye.
Yeah. But no, I went back and I watched when the ship actually landed on Jabim. Mm-hmm. When it's landing, you can see another one sitting to the side. You can just briefly make it out. But then when they land and they start disembarking from the ship, you can see other landing gear like behind it. So, you know, there's another ship back there.
Well, in the shot where he catches it, do they keep it kind of obscured, like with the
I didn't look at that. I didn't look at that because I was satisfied when I saw him land. Yeah. So I was like, I'm assuming it's there, you know.
Yeah. But so he gets faked out.
But I like the idea that he force grabbed the ship, but when he brought it down, the cool part was when he just started pulling the thing apart.
Oh yeah.
You know, he's just like,
woof. That's like temper tantrum.
Yeah. Get me to it. Get me at it.
Get him at.
Get out.
Where are they at?
Why?
Only he would have been shaking his fist at him after.
That would have been great. He should have done that because he's done.
Ah,
no. Okay. But after that, Reva makes her move finally, and it was a terrible move.
Yes,
it was a pretty terrible move. I admit, I was like, she could have done better.
Yeah,
that's your moment.
I mean, if anything, you should have just gotten to, you know, just get the lightsaber up close to him and just ignite it where it's too
wherever
close
it was,
for
yeah.
any for anything to, you know, block it or him to catch it.
Like, I mean, she could have done something. She could have done something, anything better than just going like, like she could have been like, hey, something's wrong. Saber, what's
yeah. Oh. But what you brought up in their duel, Austin, and Ashley, that was something I really liked, where it almost seemed like he was the choreography on his part very much seemed like those old masters of like Kurosawa films, you know, samurai films and stuff, where they didn't fight with weapons. They were using their, you know, basically their mainly dodging, which is very interesting to see Vader do. He was playing completely defensive, but and he was doing it without a weapon. Yeah. I love that, because that was a version of Vader fighting that we haven't seen. I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I think we maybe got a glimpse of it in Revenge of the Sith, or not Revenge of the Sith, but Return of the Jedi, when Luke finally put him on the defensive. But to see how skilled he was, and there was a really great moment where it really like caught up to me where he caught her blade coming down on him, and then he just moved it to the side. He pushed it off.
Yeah, yeah, that was great. Very kung fu to me. Yeah, you know, because you do this and then this, and you know, it's like, okay, yeah. This is
that's what I loved it. Yeah. And it also to me it was like when I was younger, how I imagined Vader would fight, because he can't like really. I'm like. He's limited in his movements. So that lightsaber really is, it's almost like for show. It's like him just kind of like toying with you. Mm-hmm. He could just with one hand, just snap your neck or like, you know, knock your weapon away and do all, you know, he didn't have to have a lightsaber. No. That was really cool.
Yeah. And then which I didn't realize this about the Inquisitor sabers. Yeah. He apparently they can separate because it didn't seem like he tore it apart. It looked like he deconstructed it into two separate pieces.
Because somehow it got put back together again.
Yeah. So he deconstructed
it. I thought Grant the Grand Inquisitors did that.
It turns into two pieces that can separate.
Yeah.
That's first. Oh, maybe it's the first time it's happened in live action. That was a surprise.
I was going to say it was the first time because they, in that episode in particular, as they were kind of using all their tricks, like the spinning blades and all that.
Yeah, she tried that.
Yeah, yeah. The Grand Inquisitor, I remember he split the blades in two. Yeah.
Which, speaking of spinning, that was another great Vader moment where he just stopped it, which was. That was pretty nice.
My thing though is that it's like all of it was awesome and I loved it. But from her, I'm like, I'm disappointed in you, girl. I'm like, he taught you these things. He gave you that tool. What are you doing?
Why are you trying to use the things he gave you without thinking that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Already, it just almost was like, like you didn't know it could do that, did you? It's almost like I've got the receipts. and then he just puts his hands out and it just falls to pieces.
I think she's just overwhelmed because she knows he's toying desperate. With me. Yeah. He's toying with me. You know, he's like not even trying.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like a part of Vader in her because the blind rage, you know, she's just as blind as Vader is for Kenobi. She's got the same, you know, and that's a cool little parallel is that she's got a similar parallel to Vader, you know, mm-hmm. Anakin, who consumed with his rage at Kenobi, she's consumed with her rage at him, you know, so it's not like logic's going to enter her equation too often.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, he separates it. He makes her do a straight up duel with him and then finish, you know, he puts one through her. And then we find out the secret we had known, something we just weren't sure if it was going to be shown or not. The Grand Inquisitor was, okay. You know, he survived.
Mm-hmm.
I loved his explanation. He said, you'd be surprised what revenge can make you survive. I mean, look at Anakin. You know, Anakin's a poster child for that.
Yeah, but the cool thing about this is you could see that Vader has been toying or playing with this girl for a very long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he knew what she was all about from day one. Yeah. I guess he could sense the vengeance in her.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see that to me, obviously he doesn't want anybody killing Kenobi, but him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's using her as bait.
Yeah.
They did a good job of that
right now. He's really using her as bait.
And if anybody was, if anybody was going to try to complain that that's a stupid plan on Vader's part, training a girl who was out to kill him, it's like that's par for the course with Sith.
Oh, for sure.
Because Anakin,
haven't been reading the comics or any of the material. I mean, this is, like you said, par for the course.
Yeah, I mean, immediately after Vader was knighted by Sidious, he was already planning to overthrow Sidious. You know, the only cog that got, blown up in that plan was he got, burned alive on, Mustafar.
Yeah.
So, and Sidious, Sidious knows this all the time. You know, that was even a plot point of Unleashed was this was a secret weapon for him to try to employ against Sidious one day.
Yeah.
Starkiller. So, looking at that, this is just typical Sith stuff is they're always plotting to kill each other.
Not they always make you think it seems like it's the MO to always make you feel like you're in control, and then you always end up realizing you had no control whatsoever to begin with.
Yeah. So I'll say this, looking back on it now, I can see from episode two, because Reva had Obi-Wan dead to rights in that hangar. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the Grand Inquisitor comes in. To me, that was a setup. you know, one, you're not killing Kenobi. Lord Vader's killing Kenobi. But we're going to make it seem like I'm letting Kenobi get away, basically. Because maybe there's something bigger that Vader sees. Then when Vader finally meets him, he's like, this is not the Kenobi I want to defeat. This Kenobi is broken.
Yeah.
And maybe throughout this whole thing, he's trying to help Kenobi get back to...
He wants a fair fight.
He dragged him through the fire. Maybe he was like, let's wake you up. He's like, let's put some spark back in your...
Makes you wonder, like, they could have added a few shots in there where he was like actively making the stormtroopers not be able to get around the fires. Like you see them tripping. He's like, oh, sorry about you tripping. And he pushes them back further.
But so also
Vader, we could get right across this. No, we can't.
No, but also he didn't kill Reva on purpose. She's still bait.
Yeah.
Right. And right. You know, I know she finds that, you know, she finds out that she finds the broken Jedi communicator and she hears Owen Tatooine, the boy, and
she knows Owen the farmer.
Yeah.
From the first episode.
There was something out taking him there or something. Or Bail says, I'm going there.
The three key words were Tatooine, Owen, which the farmer, and the boy. Yeah.
But there was another like three line sentence there, or three word sentence before that, like taking him there or something. I can't remember. I watched it again.
Because remember the full message was he still hadn't heard back from Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And he's assuming something's going wrong, so he's going to do the emergency thing and get to Tatooine
and to help Owen.
Help Owen and get them away from there somewhere safer.
Yeah. So, you know, Vader doesn't know about this part, but he knows that if I leave her alive, she's going to try to make her way back to Kenobi. Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah. Either because she's turned, you know, I need Kenobi's help to kill Vader, or I've turned back to the good side or whatever, or I'm going to kill Kenobi for this, you know, she's bait. He's following her.
But the thing about that is something has to happen, because Vader can't find out about Tatooine's importance. He can't find that out, because, you know, he doesn't find out about Luke until after A New Hope. Then he finally finds out his name, and then he realizes, oh, crap, I have a son. So,
yeah. It's probably just building suspense, but it probably will never actually happen. Just a threat.
I think there'll be something with Vader. I think something probably will happen with Vader and Kenobi. But I think the thing with Obi-Wan and Reva, this is going to be my prediction right now, is that that's going to be more of an intimate type scene. I don't think they're going to have a straight up fight. I think it's going to be more along the lines of she's going to see what I think she's going to find out about Luke, but I think she's going to see the importance in it. I don't know if that means she's going to get killed somehow, or if she's going
to probably redeem. If they're trying to see about somehow this Padawan coming back and redeeming herself, and she'll probably sacrifice herself in the final episode, and it'll be like her becoming a Jedi, you know, doing a Jedi thing.
But see, but that's the thing though, because a lot has to happen in that episode, and if it was to go that way, a lot has to happen in terms of she has to go to Tatooine, have some moment, and then also go out to kill Vader, because I'm sure part of the restriction in terms of script writing is no matter what, Vader cannot find out about Tatooine. So somehow that's got to be kept from it. So him ever reaching Tatooine.
I will say rumors are going around right now saying that this next episode is going to be longer.
Okay.
Well, they're saying it's supposed to be the longest Star Wars episode ever done yet.
Yeah. But is it the longest Stranger Things episode? Because they can't.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, like at the end of every one of these things, even Marvel stuff, it's like, oh, the last episode's going to be super long. It turns out like 30 minutes. Like, it's the shortest one, you morons. But okay, so that's your prediction. Let's just wrap up this episode with predictions for the finale.
Well, I just want to say one more thing, though.
Okay.
I love that the Grand Inquisitor, his pettiness, to get back to that thing we brought up at the beginning, his pettiness at Reva at the end when he took her patch, put it back on, but also just that dark side pettiness of, I'm going to leave you in the gutter where you were found.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With that thick elitist British accent. I love it.
Yeah. That was a good line.
I'm the new Grand Inquisitor again.
He wants to like fist bump Vader so bad. Like, right, a burner, right?
Hey, you on the ground. Ta ta.
Yeah.
And then he just flourishes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Prediction. Let's wrap the show. Let's wrap this up. Predictions for next week's finale, whatever you want to predict. Let's see if it comes true. We can look back and say, did it come true?
Well, you know what? Quick thing. I don't think Obi-Wan's worn his blue outfit yet, so he's got to get it in the next episode.
Yeah, maybe.
His the Tibbidon Station. So Tibbidon Station is probably going to appear in the next episode.
And that may be where Vader
and Inquisitor might be searching for Obi-Wan.
Because remember, there's no hyperdrive. Hyperdrive's not working on this ship that they just left out on. Executor, it's going to be a Last Jedi thing.
I wonder if it'll take place.
Those curvy lasers where they're like, poof, off, poof, off, poof.
Well, I wonder. I would like to see an episode where it's not on a planet. I want to see another spaceport or space station type deal, kind of like what we saw in episode 4 of Mando. I mean, I don't know if it'll happen in this one, but yeah, I could see like a cool little him escaping moment, Tibbidon Station being like a spaceport. That'd be pretty cool if it turns out like that. You know, so place that, you know, that they happen to reach.
So if Vader can't go to Tatooine, which I'm not saying he can't, I guess they're going to catch up with the ship at some point. Maybe pull it in by tractor beam and everything happens aboard the Star Destroyer, possibly.
I was assuming that probably things would go down either like on his ship or like, I don't know, some sort of an Imperial base or something. I didn't really know for sure, but that's how I feel like it's going to end, is it's going to finally be Obi-Wan, you know, with every, because we've built up to him finally kind of getting his groove back, and now it's kind of like him sending Anakin to the final school before we see him again in A New Hope. So that's just how I assume it's going to be. But then again, it's so popular that the show's probably going to get a second season, so they may push that all off. But I doubt it. I don't know. It's going to be tricky.
Overall story beats. Here's quick overall story beats I think that'll play. I think there's going to be, I am not guessing at places or how specific, I'm thinking going to be a stop somewhere, Tibbidon Station, wherever that is. I think there's going to be a showdown with either just Vader or Vader and the Inquisitor of some sort. I don't know how big it'll be. Then that situation will kind of be resolved. Obi-Wan has to, you know, escape to Tatooine, and then it's going to be a much smaller ordeal with Reva, I bet. And then however that plays out. And because it kind of like almost one of those Western things where the hero thinks he's finally, you know, gotten back home and he can rest in safety. And then there's one last fly in the ointment that's coming to confront them. And then that's kind of like this final showdown of the actual movie.
I can see that.
I just assume she's probably going to sacrifice herself to get like so that he can get away or something like that. But yeah, I don't know.
Okay. I the only reason I would say not that is she's got the key right now. She's got the key to the puzzle. So I think story wise, I think she's going to be recovering and going after that clue that she found in that communicator. So she's going to be recovering, and if she doesn't have DVD parts in her, she's going to be heading to Tatooine,
right? Yeah.
To find Bail and whoever, you know, Owen is protecting.
I could see that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good discussion for tonight. I think we covered everything.
So on to Star Wars Celebration. I'm ready to talk about day two.
And an hour and 14 minutes in. All right, almost an hour and 15 minutes in. This is the longest episode of the Outer Rim News show since we've come back.
What do you see when we start talking about Stranger Things?
Oh my gosh. We're doing a Stranger Things podcast too? Okay. Awesome. All right, though. Any last words? Speak now for
peace. Tune in for the last episode because it's probably going to be a huge event.
Ray?
Listen to Kate Bush. She's pretty dang good. It's a Stranger Things reference.
From me, hey, I got this. Yay. Yeah, yeah, I got that. And go buy you some Power of the Force figures, too. Power of the Force, too. All right, that's it for this week. May the Force be with you.
Later days.